You're listening to The Good.
Don't call me Paino.
The Bad.
Absolute.
And The Rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and The Hask. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody, and welcome along to yet another edition of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby in partnership with City Index, the leading provider of spread betting, CFD and FX trading. It's good to be back with you. We are riding the train of positivity this week, are we not? Because if we don't, we might well cry. I'm not sure anybody comes here to listen to our views on Ukraine. I think we'll leave that for others to talk about, but hang on in there to the goodies. I absolutely loved my rugby weekend.
It was
Saturday
delightful.
Morning to Sunday late afternoon. The sun was out and it was brilliant.
No.
You were on good form at second half. You didn't.
No, I was about to say no, fully agree.
Fully agree.
Sorry, yeah.
You just went no.
Nope.
No. I was going to say no.
You could start with yes if we're doing positivity.
Yes, I fully agree.
Well, I was one thing I'd have is I didn't get to fully sit down and watch the French game properly because corporate are twickers.
Corpers.
Yeah. Corpers, warpers.
Let's just quickly recap. We had a full house at Twickenham. You were on great form.
Thank
with
you.
The people. Tins was there having a great time at the Green Room. England won a nail biter. It wasn't a great game, I'm sure we'll agree, but Wales left with something, which they probably deserved. We had heartwarming scenes at the end, which we'll come on to. Really, really good to see a proper unity between both sets of players, obviously off the back of a Lions tour as well, and much needed as well, 12 months on from the fairly unseemly death threats and unpleasantness of Cardiff. So it was very nice to see that. France was superb, Scotland down, but they had positives. Rory Darge, welcome to the Test Arena. Chaos in Dublin, but plenty to talk about if you're putting positive spins on it. Mia Tyndall was involved in two absolute thrillers for Minch Minis. Harry Payne got stuck in for Richmond under-10s against some very good teams at Rosslyn Park. Life is good and all of it playing
and
out
was
in the sunshine.
Minnie Haskell battering Chloe's bladder. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Running decoy lines.
Yeah.
In the womb. She's got
a little app that I have to... I am obviously very interested in.
The fruit app.
Yeah,
fruit, how size they are.
Yeah, apparently she's an onion, size of an onion at the moment. And she's doing little teaspoons of whey, apparently. Again, I'm not sure I needed to know that. Chloe made sure I had to turn off all technology, give a full undivided attention to hear about how things were developing. But yeah, she's good. Bertie was good.
Good.
He was very happy to come back from the dog sitters.
How did he do this weekend?
Bertie?
Yeah.
Predictions.
I think he did all right. No, he actually called Wales, unfortunately, but then he got...
Well, he wasn't far off.
No, he obviously... And I think he called Ireland and he called France.
Two out of three again.
Two out of three again, yeah.
He's running far hotter than we are. Do you know, someone at Twickenham, and actually this was a really heartwarming moment, there were lots of heartwarming moments, but someone, we were doing the Players' Lounge with the RFU, somebody came up and said they'd taken up rugby again, having listened to the pod.
Really?
He said, I missed it so much. I'm still only playing third team, but I absolutely love it. And that in some ways is sort of putting a bit of a good back.
That's amazing.
I was really pleased,
good because it's a big thing at the moment in grassroots rugby. Obviously, you know, doing
back in
my
the
stuff
game.
For Minch, back in the game.
Yeah.
You know, if you do listen and you used to play and COVID's meant that you've stopped playing, just go back, do a bit of training. You don't have to play every week. Just get back involved. Have a few pints with your mates.
It's not even all about the rugby all the time.
It's about your mental health and just getting back around the lads and having a few beers and sharing stories.
I imagine there's quite a lot of people who listen to this podcast and now hate it so much they'd rather be anywhere else. So
we're
still having
the same driving
effect.
Them back.
We're driving them back. Forcing them
whatever
away.
It
you're
takes.
Welcome. Local rugby clubs around the world, you're welcome.
You're welcome. Shall we start with Twickenham first of all? It wasn't a cracking game. It was a cracking occasion. It's the first Six Nations game with a full house since, I don't know, for a long old time. Thoughts overall, first of all?
It wasn't a cracking first half.
Yeah.
But what do we want at the end of a game? Into the 85th minute with the game on the line and someone's got to make someone's either got to make a play, which Maro Itoje did, or someone's going to have to make a mistake. And there were a lot of line breaks. Cuthbert had the game of his life, never seen make so many line breaks. It wasn't because of that. It was just final finishing pass. A lot of penalties in that first half where the referee was just trying to set a tone. But then the second half, you can't argue about the second half, about drama and everything you love about sport and the fact that it's coming down to the last play. I'm sat next to Jiffy, friend of the show, and he's at the first half, he's like, oh my God, we're shit. Oh, shit, this is, we've got no cutting edge. And then at the end of it, he's going, we're going to win it. Everybody said that's not playing well is now having the game of their lives. And that's the beauty of sport, it's the roller coaster. And I think it's far better if you compare it to England against Italy, where the first half, you think, okay, we're going to explode. Then the second half still, yeah. At least when you finish with a second half like that, everyone leaves happy because it's a genuine contest. And I think off the field, you got the same reaction from the fans.
Yeah.
That you would have got from the players. They've just done a hard fought match and everyone's walked away happy.
It felt like one of those scouts fires, you know, which you're flicking the flint on. In the first half, there were so many opportunities for the fire to go off. You know, England had 5 metre lineouts, 5 metre scrums. Wales had 6 or 7 minutes of possession early on, and it didn't quite catch fire. And then eventually it did, type thing, didn't it? But did England deserve it?
I think it's hard about teams deserving it. I think, you know, but obviously both gave it incredible effort. We were actually down pitch side in that last kind of 7 minutes. And obviously everywhere I stood, people were, get out of the way, sit down. Because I make a great door, not a great window.
So hey, behemoth.
Yeah, get out of the way, meathead. Haskell, move.
Keep it in the zoo, man.
You know, like when you go to football stadiums and there's obviously like chanting and everyone's dropping the C-bomb. The biggest insult to Twickenham was, sit down, sit down. So they were giving out abuse to everybody, but to Alex and myself. And we were sitting by the hoarding.
Well, more to you, not so much to me.
I would sort of, we were earmarked
together.
I'm a
pencil, yeah, a door.
As long as you're turned sideways, you're not blocking anyone's view. Yeah.
You know, obviously as they got to that last 5 minutes, we thought they might do it. Yeah. You know, there was that moment where I think Courtney got his hand on a ball, nudged it on, penalty. We thought, wow, is this going to be the moment? And actually, we kind of wanted them to do it. I think we were sitting there going, we're obviously England fans, but it'd be quite cool if Wales got away with it. What a turn up for the books. But I think the fact that the sun was shining, Twickenham was at its best. Everyone was actually in full voice. I'm normally quite critical sometimes about the England fans. The fact is Twickenham is quite corporate. You know, they've only got one song, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, which they tried to take away for us for various reasons. But they were belting it out, and I thought it was incredible. And to see the players afterwards, you know, I had a chat with Liam Williams, obviously disappointed, half his head was hanging off with blood on his face. But I think everyone was happy and slightly relieved. But I think England, because of the way they endeavoured to attack and actually created some of those line breaks, I think probably were the better team for most of that game.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody deserved to win it. I think, both sides deserved to win it, sorry, but I think it kind of ended up as it should have done.
What I would say about England is there is still place in Test match rugby for building a score. The 3-6-9, you know, Wales turned down 2 shots at goal, 3 shots at goal, went for the line-outs, then came away with nothing. And ultimately,
England turned down 3 when Liam Williams went to the bin as well.
I did think actually that, because that point when you talked about France 2 weeks ago about them now building a score and just chipping away at it and just getting those points, it always seems to me, and this is actually based on no fact at all, but when England start a tournament, autumn, Six Nations or whatever, the first few games, if they had an opportunity to take points, more often than not, they go for the line out and then they kind of either narrowly win or have lost, like, for example, against Scotland, where we felt they could have gone for the draw or whatever. But actually, then they seem to then later on in those games with the game management start to make the more appropriate decisions. And actually, I really liked it that Marcus Smith, even though I thought he played brilliantly on the weekend, just kept taking the points, kept taking him. And suddenly, as Mike said, you're in that great position, and it's almost like they learn the game management. I know Eddie says it's a young team, but it's those little bits that that's what makes us, you know, the precedent should be set straight away that we always try to build a score. Yes, we'd like to see lineouts. Unfortunately, the crowd want to see tries, but actually that's what you have to do. And I thought that was the big telling thing between the sides. Every time we got into their 22, or more often than not, we came away with the points. And I just as well to mention to Courtney Laws, who I thought was utterly brilliant.
Yeah.
What a machine that man is. Ben Youngs as well.
So I want to go through some of this in a sort of quick fire, no particular order, just some real standout performance for the day. You've touched on Alex Cuthbert, first of all. I'm an England fan, but having seen his journey in the sport, where, I mean, he took untold abuse playing for Wales for a while. He was a Lion in 2013. Then it dipped hugely, went back to Exeter. I mean, I think it was one of the best games I've ever seen him play. Yeah, most meters he's ever made, I think.
For sure. And I'm not, I would honestly say I'm not his biggest fan in terms of certain parts about his game, but when he's on, he can break tackles all day long. And that was, you know, his 50th game, right?
Yeah.
You want to do that on your 50th game, and you've just got to tip your cap to him and say, fair play. His work rate, he was everywhere. He was on his wing, the other wing. And he deserves all the plaudits off the back of it because he does get a hard time a lot of the time. And when someone plays as well as that, people need to make sure they tell him.
That is weird that he gets such hard, because you can understand why I would get a hard time. But he just doesn't kind of, he seems like a really nice guy. He's not outwardly kind of show-offy. He's not kind of difficult, but he just, because of the perception of him as a winger, he just gets hammered more often than not by Welsh fans. And I think exactly right. We love the underdog kind of story, and actually much more the emotional story rather than the nuances of the game on this show. And for someone like him to come and do that, I thought was brilliant. But just to get in the mix and get that and do it like he did, because after the first couple of breaks, you could hear people go, wow, bloody hell, Cuthbert's doing well.
Yeah.
And then it just became consistent throughout the game.
It was part of that a sort of nothing to lose mentality. I know you probably never take to the field with a nothing to lose mentality, but given what he's been through, if anyone can get into that place, it's probably him.
Yes.
Did you ever play with a I've got nothing to lose here mentality? And what was the impact of that?
Well, I played some of the best rugby in my life.
Think of incidents? Specific?
I mean, Australia in 2000. I mean, under Eddie Jones, all of that was. I had this moment where I talked about it in What Flanker. I was sitting in a cafe in Chiswick with a friend of mine, Mark Trav.
Of course you were.
Of course I was, darling. Sipping on a flat white. And we're having a chat, and he put the video game up of me playing at Twickenham. And he said, I want to go through the video with you. He's a guy called Travis Allen. He's a Kiwi. Obviously, Kiwis know more about us rugby than anybody else immediately. And he was really influential in helping me make some really game-changing decisions. He went through the game. He looked at it. He was like, look, you're just avoiding the ball. You don't look like you want to carry. You look like you're playing within yourself. You're like nervous about making mistakes. And I didn't like what he said. And I was like, you know what? I was like, who the fuck do you think you're talking to? Like, you haven't even played international rugby. And then I went away and I went, do you know what? Actually, he's exactly right. I'm playing in myself. I was more worried about making mistakes than I was performing. And I was kind of being a bit, I didn't want to get criticized. I was just being very comfortable. And I then decided I wanted to play every single game as if A, it was my last, but or wanted to create a highlight reel. So if I wanted to try something, I did. So, there's time I played for England, throwing the ball between my legs against New Zealand, trying to offload, and I had it in my game in parts, but I probably got away with it and become way too conservative. And then when Reddie Jones came in, I knew I was lucky to be still involved with England. I didn't think I was going to be involved again. And that's how I took the field. And that's how I played the rest of my career. And when I talked about regrets, when we did that retirement show years ago, I wish I'd realised that more often and not played with inside myself. And it looked like he just played for himself. Mm. And actually, people say about playing for the team, but if you have a point of difference and his ability to get over the game line is his point of difference, you need to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of players, especially young players, they try to work on every area of their game. And actually, you don't want to do that. There's no point telling Billy Vunipola to do things he can't do. Or, there's very few players that are completely rounded. If you've got something exceptional skill, like he has the ability to get that line break for such a big unit, he's fast. Why not go and play it? And I think 100% it can have that positive effect on you, and 100% it can change the way that you you perform. And I think it's a great lesson, because actually it follows into life outside of sport. If you're worried about what people are thinking and doing and whether the criticism you're going to get, you end up being inhibited.
Yeah,
I'd say to anybody, just go and do what you need to do and worry about yourself. And if your teammates and your coaches are okay with it, the rest of it doesn't matter. And that was a massive salutary lesson that I learned, and he seems to have done that really well.
Well done, Alex Cuthbert. Onwards and upwards. Right, let's do quick fire positives. Can we just talk about Ellis's wheels on the wide outside?
Yeah.
I've never seen him roller skate so fast. He didn't quite get there, but what a turn of speed.
He played really well on the weekend. You know when you just want him to be his best, carrying best, and he was that on the weekend, and he has got pace. I mean, he almost caught someone from behind as well. I mean, speaking to people in the green room on the weekend, and people from Bristol are so excited for him to go back, and everyone's now seeing what we've been talking about for 2 years, the change in his mentality and everything, and you're starting to see that more and more consistently on the field.
Did you see his post?
Yes.
It was very good there.
Very good. And it also
with his little one saying, my boy with England's best baller.
And Marcus Smith. Yeah. It was genius. Again, that was one of those, I had one of those wistful moments, obviously, with the impending birth at some point, my daughter, fingers crossed. I realised, I looked at Sladey as well with his cute little girl, and obviously Jack Noel. I'm never going to have had that. And and you talk about wanting to have it early, and it wasn't the right time for me to do it earlier. But actually, those moments where you think, how cool is that? The photo of Ellis with his son looking at Marcus Smith, just those moments are, you can't buy them. And, you know, the kid doesn't know now, but at some point they're going to look back and reflect and go, that was a special, special moment.
Yeah, I mean, I so we had Mia in 2014. I retired in 2014. So I've got a few pictures of me walking around carrying her on the pitch in the last game and stuff, and that's it. But it's still not the same as most of them grow up. Mia has an idea, but the other two won't have a clue really what I did or what, unless you choose to go down memory lane with them.
Do you think that's what, there's one thing I said to Chloe, and I came out of the house and I said, I wanted to keep something, and I said, I'll show it to her. And you know, she goes, it was something about me DJing. She went, she's not going to know about that. She's going to know about you being a rugby player. I went, but I don't think she will. And I don't have that moment. And I wonder if it gets me a little bit wistfully sometimes when you see the lads going, I don't need my kid to appreciate what I did, but actually sharing that moment would have been quite special, I think, for both of us.
Yeah, I agree. But then at the same time, Mia keeps going around saying he was the best rugby player ever. So I'm quite happy she's never seen.
At least someone's listening to you then.
I'm quite happy she's never seen a game. Otherwise, she'd go, actually, he's not. I completely agree. I would have loved to. You know, Bolshoe, my best mucker, he had his kids quite young, and they're late into their teens. And they would all remember him playing, which I always think would have been really nice.
One of them's a really good tennis player, isn't
he? Yeah,
it?
Felix.
It's Felix, yeah.
Yeah, I've got, might have a bet on him to win a major at some point.
He's that good?
Well, he's been in the top 10 of his age group in France. So he is good.
That's insane. Where's my gum shield? I'd love him to come running on. Where's my tennis racket?
I don't know whether Bolshoe would want to tell this, but I did ring him once. He was watching Felix train. And he went, hang on, Felix, that's, he did swear, that's rubbish. If you're going to do it like that, I'm not bringing you anymore. Hello, mate, you're all right. I said, inspirational parenting, that boy.
Tiger parenting.
And he goes, it's like, hey, he's like me, mate. If I don't tell him, he'll just do it all the time.
I love that. But what's, I think now with this generation is everything lasts forever. So, you know, when someone tries to reassure you, mainly a friend of mine going, oh, by the way, James, don't worry about today's newspapers, tomorrow's chip paper. It's absolutely not. So when, you know, with Mia at one point, when she does take more of an interest, because they get that
she's
moment.
She's not allowed an iPad or a Google search.
Yeah, but at some point she's going to go Google something, they're going to YouTube, they're going to be like 10, and then they'll get into it. You see it with some of the other players' kids who were completely disinterested, and then they've discovered what their dad did, and suddenly they want to go out kicking. I'm just terrified about how much stuff I can get taken off the internet.
Well, I was going to say, surely there's a detective out there who can clear up your past history.
You can pay a lot to get it all forensically removed.
Is that right,
James? Yeah, apparently, but just fuck it. I'll be like, listen, I'm so sorry. We haven't got a name for it. Baby potato, I'm so sorry.
Talking of kids on pitch, some really nice pictures with Ben Youngs with his son and daughter at the end as well. And I would like you to pay due tribute to, because you haven't always been his biggest fan, but actually not only is it a hell of an achievement, but also he played a hell of a role in steadying a ship that sprung a couple of leaks at that point, 60 minutes.
And look, as I'll always say, you don't get 115 caps for not being a quality player. Now, what goes in between that is, are other players playing well at time? That's personal preference, whatever. But he plays better off the bench. He was so good. And the ball went away. Whether he just goes on, he knows he's got to play fast-paced tempo because he's only on for 30 minutes. But he was so good. The ball was away quicker than I've ever seen it before. He runs that little bit, which then holds those first two defenders, as Hask would know. And then if your forwards are running around the corner, it gives the likes of Ellis, Marrow, Don Brandt, those chances to really get on the front foot and hit the back foot. And congratulations to him. I mean, to beat the greatest in Leonard, then congratulations to you.
It's a hell of an achievement.
It's incredible for someone in England.
We've discussed this before. He's only the second centurion in England, whereas Australia have got about 30.
But I know that you spoke about this before on last week's pod about the central contracted system. Once you're in a centrally contracted system playing for your country in a small country like, in terms of population, like, you know, Australia or Wales or whatever, once you're in, it's very hard to get out. Whereas in England, with the amount of games that we play, the injuries that then happen off the back of it, to stay fit for that amount of time, even though there's more games now than when Leonard played, to stay fit all that time and in favour is very, very rare.
It's weird because we're the only sort of species on the planet that puts a stall by numbers. We don't normally kind of, nothing else does that, but actually it's such an amazing thing to do, even though it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, to do it like he's done it and to get to that level of caps and to beat Jason over here, I think is amazing. And also to remain of just the same kind of bloke the whole way through, I think, is pretty special. And most, you know, most people haven't got a bad word to say about Ben. And to do it in the way he does it, he's such a nice, friendly face. And I was there when he made his debut in 2010, and he's been great all the way through. So I couldn't be more excited.
Does the Twitter thing still exist about things that Ben says?
Oh, yes. Didn't Tom Croft start that?
Crofty started it. I mean, but he did generally always just drop those clangers all the time.
There's a very cool mural that they've done on the wall at Holt Rugby where it all began. I don't know if you saw that. They've got a graffiti artist. It looks really good. It's worth having a little look at. From 115 to 50... Well done, the Stinkler. God, his back looked big, didn't it?
Massive back.
Massive back.
But I think it's an exponential growth versus the number of caps he's got with the more incoherent bollocks he's posting on social media. It's just utter, utter nonsense. But I love it. It's the best way of putting a picture of yourself up and just putting a load of sidetracking bullshit about spirit, destination, earth, life goals. And it just stinks. Just post a picture and go, oh, look sexy as fuck, crack on.
Look at the size of my back.
Yeah, I thought he was great, you know, in the way he carried. And he's such a character as well. I think he's got his new documentary coming out on ITV3, apparently.
ITV4, Against the Odds, telling inspirational stories from across the world of sports on, you probably get it by the ITV player.
I tell you what was against the odds, that the council didn't shut down the playing permission for him putting that shower in a cupboard.
Do you think that'll make against the odds?
He can do whatever he wants. He'll still be the guy who put a shower in a cupboard.
If you put a shower in a cupboard with absolutely no draining or sealant, then put a urinal in his living room because he used to piss out the French windows. But
James Haskell ruining reputations one by one.
No, but he deserves it. Because, you know, both, he's come on a real long journey in terms of his own... I think he was always actually much more of a caricature than the media would have you believe. I think he's much more sensible, but I think he like played up to it. But he's a fantastic player and a really good guy, and such, you know, he's a real sweetheart as well, which makes a difference, you know.
Don Brandt, hell of a finish. It's sort of rugby's equivalent of the slam dunk, where you get it by millimeters at full extension.
I thought he had a great game. Yeah. Yeah, like I thought for the first time, yeah, it's been tough because we've all been calling for Don Brandt and Simmons. By the way, I thought Simmons played really well when he came off the bench.
Big defense.
He smashed
Falatau, I think it was.
Falatau like twice.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a time thing, and a bit, you know, people talk about combinations and the fact that in modern day rugby you don't really spend time on combinations because the team changes so much, and it just shows that, yeah, when you get that feeling of being in the team and understanding your role within it, you will get better within that. And I thought finally he carried the ball hard. Obviously, he took his try at full dive, like you said, off the back of the line out. And I just thought it was the best game he's had for England so far. And hopefully that gives him the confidence to move forward and the confidence in Eddie to either stick with him and put a bit more faith in him.
I'd say the balance of the forward pack in particular looked better.
Because I thought Charlie Yules had his best game for England.
Yeah, I thought Charlie Yules was very good. Marrow did what Marrow does. I thought Tom Curry, you know, obviously there's a lot of hype about Tom, but it's so justified in my mind. You know, there was a great moment where I think, was it Malins chased down Liam Williams, you know, right next to him's Tom Curry on the kick chase, you know, and I think got the turnover at the breakdown in on the bottom right-hand corner. I thought he was very good. I thought Courtney Laws adds a completely another dimension. One of the issues we had as an England team when, you know, and I still rate Billy and Macca, I think they're brilliant, but when you had those guys in the team, Billy was a carrier, Macca was a carrier, and then you didn't have many other guys who wanted to get their hands on the ball. Now when you play, defence has got to worry about Don Brandt, it's got to worry about Curry, it's got to worry about Courtney, it's got to worry about Ellis, it's got to worry about Sinks, and it's got to worry about Luke Cowan-Dickie and also Jamie George. And suddenly you're having to make much more decisions where actually it was a little bit predictable. If you had Billy and someone else, you're like, Billy's definitely going to carry. And that's why at times when we played the better sides, say like New Zealand, he hasn't had the day that he would want. And I think now with the guys putting those amount, Don Brandt 16 carries or 61 metres or something like that he got. I think Courtney, you know, we've talked about how his development, his footwork at the line, but his physicality in the defence, when you know he's going to hit someone, you've got no Curry's going to hit someone. Charlie Yules, I think, you know, he's added that real physical element. I think Marrow, with his ability to compete on the ball, you're suddenly asking so many questions of an attack. So I think the balance is really good. And I think, like you said, if you want to filter in like a Simmons, could easily start against the side if you wanted to be slightly more dynamic, or you bring him off the bench and add that kind of real value when you're tired. Imagine, you know, you change your front row, you bring on some other back row, and someone like Sam Simmons comes on, you're like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. A quick word on Wales. I mean, they just will not go away, and you've got to give them enormous credit for that. But I mean, Faletau, enormous. Thomas Williams, lively. What did you like? Where would you go?
I liked. I thought a lot of people. Nick Tompkins, I thought, stepped up in that second half. Whether they need to play that a little bit looser to get that game, because can't figure out about Wales how they are trying to play. I know that Wayne Pivac generally wants to play a movement game, wants to play an offloading game, and they're going through a transition of losing their 700 caps or whatever that aren't available for selection at the moment. But I think it's going to be a good thing because they have to start relying on other people. You know, Liam Williams has to become a leader if Tompkins is going to be in there all the time. They need to sort of step up. Obviously, Bigger last week was two weeks ago, was the leading light in terms of wouldn't go off, didn't want to go off. They need those players to start influencing that group because there is going to be a younger group that comes through. You can't rely on, you know, your Jonathan Davies, your Alan Wynn coming back, your Tippericks, all these people who are out at the moment. You can't rely on them to come back. You still have to have these players have got to lead you forward. And they've got to be able to play like that. I mean, they outscored 3-1, which again goes back to the point of England taking those points was vital. I like that team on paper. Now, a few of the Welsh people I was speaking on the weekend didn't like it, but I was still saying, you know, there's great individual talent. They've just got to pull it all together. And then the second half, you saw all that individual talent, line breaks, you know, clean breaks. They made more clean breaks than we did. So there is creativity there. They've just got to get that consistent. But what last year proved is they get better after with each game. That's something they've got to figure out.
As well, the experience of going to Twickenham, right, going behind like they did, and then showing that resilience to get back into the game, to almost seal it out, to raise that physicality. When you look at guys like Tame Basham, who hasn't had that experience before, suddenly that's just another experience in the bank and will help with that transition. Now, you might not get the result you want now, but those lessons on how to execute, to look after the ball in the final moment, because they could have 100% won that game.
Yeah.
You know, was it finished 4 points behind? You know, if they'd made some better decisions, like you said, taking the points earlier, they could have well and truly done that. I thought England showed their resilience with their defence. But actually, Wales, I don't think are that far off. And I think when you look at the sides, you know, Faletau's had two games back. He was brilliant. Jonathan Davies with the biggest, sexiest quads I've ever seen.
Calves weren't small either.
Yeah, you and I were blown away by it. But he's running on without his scrum cap on, so everybody knows what he looks like. He's an absolute dreamboat. But he's obviously now got 100 caps in there, and I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah.
So they're not. I don't think they are in a bad place. I think they're not far off from getting that result and executing. And as I said, I think they've got better each game.
Wonder if it'll come in 2 weeks' time against Le Bleu. I just want to finish with probably the most heartwarming bit of the weekend, which was that we went pitch side afterwards, because you get to interview a few of the England players for the corporate box that we're in. And it was just really, really nice. I've never really asked you about the sort of half an hour after a game before, but it was really interesting watching you pitch side. And Fox Davis came over, Marrow, Elliot and Jamie, Will Rowlands came in and said hello, Neil Jenkins came in and hugged with you, Hugh Bennett chatted to us. I'm not sure either of us understood a word that he said.
Hugh Bennett,
but
honestly,
he was very friendly.
Spoke to me and Alex, and I honestly don't know what he said. Not even close. You know, like, you pick up a bit of it. He actually said he would think he was speaking Welsh.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was. It was Welsh.
Very, very nice to see Hugh. But it was really interesting for me to sort of, it's quite a privileged position to see, obviously you were back in the sort of, I suppose, the hot zone of it. But it was just really nice to see all the players, lots of Sarri's boys greeting each other. And actually a lot of that happens away from the cameras. And I just thought it was a really sort of reaffirming point about what rugby so often is. It had been an amazingly tense game played out in front of 10 million people, and yet 10, 15 minutes after the final whistle, it's like we're all. It was a really sort of like rugby family moment, which you don't often see at the sharpest end of the game.
No, and I think you're probably surprised that anyone spoke to me as well. Which is,
well, you made the point actually, for a guy who's pretty divisive, everyone came up, big smiles, big hugs. So you can't have been that big a prick.
No, that's what I mean. That's what I've always tried to say is that, you know, and actually what I think, what a lot of people do is they feed back. So the Welsh guys obviously fed back, word gets around, because from the Lions talk, because fans go, oh, we used to think you're a dickhead, but, you know, so-and-so says you're all right. Yeah. And so it was actually just very nice to see them. And I think what's happening now is, even though the game is so super professional and you're always focused on to the next job, what happened back in the day was that you would all mingle and intermingle. Now, you might not go into the change room necessarily and have a beer, like we did when I played in New Zealand, but you do interact. And for me, obviously I play with a lot of those guys, And it was just very nice to be able to say hello to them and for them to say hello to each other. Because I think the important thing is you've gone to battle for 80 minutes, but actually you've left everything out in the field. You don't have, there's no point being grumpy and arsey after the game and being all moody, because that's not going to change the game. It's very special and very privileged for us to be allowed to be down there. But I think the whole day was very positive. And you could see, you know, when we spoke to Liam Williams, you know, he's very disappointed, and, you know, Dan Bigger was there, Will Rowland, you know, obviously his head was hanging off. Yeah. He got a bit of friendly fire and someone needed him in his own, in his head. But they were all in a positive way. And I think that's the most important part about rugby, and something I always tried to do when I played, was go up and say to the opposition and meet these people that you spend all your time fighting against. Because what's the point? It's meant to be a social occasion. You do your job.
Yeah.
Then you have a chat. So I think it was very nice. And the fact that the England players were encouraged to go around the field and actually say hello, and the Welsh wanted to come out and see their family. I mean, I even saw Bobby Boucher, the rope.
You went and saw the rope?
I saw the rope. Congratulations, Bobby. Fifth child, a boy, finally four girls and a boy. So I think you might tie it in a knot, a big old knot. It wouldn't be tied in two.
A bosun.
Yeah. Use it to keep the QE2 anchored in. Congratulations, Bobby. He was on good form.
Yeah, it was a good day. It wasn't the greatest game, but it was a good day. And often, you know, rugby can do that. Well done to all involved. And as we said, much, much better scenes, I think, than 12 months ago. And that really in itself is a good thing. We are going to drop in our quick weekly postcard at this point from Honda, the official performance partner of England Rugby, who are bringing the power of dreams to the game we love. They are playing a big role, Honda, with the volunteers in the English game, and also developing their understanding of how England fans feel about the sport they love, the supporters' relationship with the team, their achievements, their hopes, and those who dream the impossible dreams. Honda believes in a challenging spirit, embracing failure and the joy of trying things, just like England Rugby and their supporters. Honda, as I'm sure you know, believes in the power of dreams. And you can find out more at honda.co.uk/engine room/HondaXRFU. Have a look at that if you'd like to know more. Actually, we'll touch on their volunteer awards a bit later in the year as well. They're doing great things with supporting the people who prop up and keep the grassroots moving. Shall we do France next? It's hard not to love a lot of what's happening in the blue shirt at the moment.
It's impossible not to love it. The brand that they play, even if you go back to the Italy game, obviously didn't really fire, but they still got the win against Scotland. You know, some of the tries are just exceptional to watch, and there's just class all the way through. I don't see a chink in their armour at the moment. I can't see it. They have a forward pack to die for that are now physical, well-organised, so far disciplined. This is the full challenge, because they should win a Grand Slam, I think.
Well, possibly at a canter.
Yeah, possibly. You know, England have got to get better. I mean, obviously, that England's only focus can be Ireland, because that's going to be tough for England, because Ireland are good as well. You go through. I mean, could you ever name a French full 15? And I could probably name the 23 at the moment.
Yeah.
That's just the quality that they have throughout it. Their back three, unbelievably solid.
I was thinking they're so good at the moment. Bryce Dulac, who was their player of the tournament last year.
And was my man crush, has been replaced by my new one, Jaminet.
Jaminet.
I would say my one bit of disappointment was that Fiku try when he just ran across the field.
It's quite under 10s rugby there. I saw a lot of that at Rosslyn Park.
That's what I mean.
Morning.
I looked at it and I was like, wow, so it's an out the back door pass. So he's just in line with the post and he just ran around the outside, bumped someone and just scored in the corner. And I was like,
shouldn't happen.
That should not, because that's the kind of try that when Seller was playing, or when you watch the old, you know, Wales of old or the Barbarians, everyone goes, the greatest generation. You see these old men, like, you know, optionally falling over. Like, obviously, the very sad passing of Inga Twigamala. Watching him play back in the day, he's like now a current winger, where there's like he's absolutely ripped up, straight trucking, footwork, and bouncing people. But then you saw the people trying to tackle him. There's one guy like put an arm out, put his head down, and just fell on the floor. And you could see him walk away again. I tried. I was like, you didn't really, mate. It was a bit like that in Scotland's defence. We're like, what, lads, what are you doing?
Yeah. What else do we love? Antoine Dupont. I mean, we're just throwing superlatives.
Yeah, if you go through it, Bai is carrying exceptionally well. Marchand is fantastic.
Machine.
Yeah, and literally a machine. You then go to Aldrete, who is just on fire. Then you've got the best player in the world by a country mile, who just dictates the show, lifts the tempo, create. And if people run into him, he ends them as well. It's just like, yeah, he's nothing he can't do. You've got the best looking 10 in the world just pulling the strings.
Yeah.
You've got two beasts in the centres who can play numerous ways with Fiku, as you say, running around people. But then you've got whether Dante. You use Dante or, you know, even Fiku can just crash it up if he needs to be. And then you've got a back three to die for. From all different, you've got Pernod, who's just so crazy, could do anything. And then his gas as well, even when he was chasing back, he chased back on Van der Merwe twice and caught him from behind, like with comfortable ease. And Van der Merwe's not slow.
Yeah.
Even when Van der Merwe scored, he had to step away from the post. And then, typical French, he just carried on running and he ran back around the post. But and then you've got Jaminet, who can not, obviously it was windy on the weekend, but normally is on fire from the boot. Was in open field kicking was outstanding. That's the thing. I don't see where that weakness is, unless it becomes mentally for some reason.
Did you see there was on the French Rugby Union Instagram page, they posted a picture of an open training session in the week. Dupont crossed the field a little bit, ran, stepped in, boom, and scored in the corner. Absolute gas. And then against Scotland, you know, training mimicking or game mimicking training, whatever you want to say, kicked the ball and he, boom, he made that outside break, stepped, boom, fended and offloaded. And it was so interesting to see him do it exactly as he did in training, carving up. And sometimes people carve up in training, but him to do it again in the actual game, I just love that.
Do you think in the post-match after you've... I mean, because everybody knows that Murrayfield is a... It's a pothole ready to fall into, and the fact that France went there and properly came away, laps in front. I just wonder whether off the back of that, Dupont gets the yellow dressing gown out and struts around. When you go into the opposition changing room, whether he goes in his canary outfit or whether he's
it's not quite the same.
So good, even
it's
if
not quite the
with
same
it.
In the Murrayfield changing rooms. They haven't quite updated though. No. 35 years. If he was at Stade de France with that massive whirlpool and everything else, he's definitely walking straight into that. He's actually got, as he walks in, he's got a harem of people who just take it off.
Birds flutter in.
And then somebody goes in and bathes him.
He's got a guy
like,
in a head mic.
Milk.
He's got a guy in a head mic going, oh my God, Dupont's coming in. Excuse me, sir, can you move out of the light? He wants a protein latte. You're not throwing people's faces.
But you've got to be so good to be able to get away with the yellow dressing. I just love to know the world's reaction. If you'd strutted around.
Well, I strutted around on a rooftop in a pink dressing gown, remember? Not quite the same, but
you need that deleted from your online
history. No, I think
history.
I look very sexy. There is one element that we've talked about that actually came to fruition and perhaps didn't go according to plan. We've talked about how sexy the French coaches were in their chic, tailored, what looks like Armani suits. Yeah. And we always ask where Sean Edwards has been because he wasn't allowed or didn't appear to be allowed
Please
in the main coach.
Me he's answered you.
He hasn't answered me, but he was allowed into the coach's box. Everyone's dressed in shit. He's in a tracksuit bottoms and a shell suit and just looked completely like, and he's up there celebrating. You know, maybe famously when he's coaching for Wales and they scored a try and he gave the finger to people, you know, and they just laughed off because didn't want to get filled in by Sean. It was the very, very much the case of that. All the French, and he's up there like that in a shell suit. I think it was probably suit trousers, trainers and a flat cap where all the rest of them were just like this, you know, just perfectly like, ah, très bien, bien sûr. Yeah.
You can take the boy out of Wigan.
No.
quick word on Scotland. It's sort of, I don't really know what, I mean, we're keeping positive. So let's do Rory Darge first of all, because that's a hell of a step up to the plate.
Yeah, I mean, you have to put this in context. They have been decimated by injuries. The whole back row had to change.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it easier to do that. In a for a country that we know, once you get outside their immediate 23, that, you know, there's a lack of experience there. So you've got to give him a huge, huge credit first and foremost. And, you know, I like the way, you know, Ali Price's little step and hold that defence, what I was talking about, and how he drops it in. You've got to give, there were positives. Some of the couple of the tries they scored outstanding, which we know Scotland can do, but it just still, you know, it's not the end of the world for them. They played they played the number one team in the world and on a day when they were on fire. Yeah. I mean, some of the offloading was just outrageous. Someone's going into touch, Jouet. Yeah, it's Harlem Globetrotter stuff. And I don't think you focus on Scotland and what they could have done better. I think they scored some great tries, as I said, but France were so good that day.
I wonder, after the first game against England, where they won and everyone was hyping them up, this is Scotland's moment, and then obviously they lost against Wales. When you're in the change room, and I can't talk about what it must have been like in Scotland, but I wonder if they were believing the hype and they were talking about it, or I think much more realistic that they probably didn't have the same conversations the media and all the fans were building them up, going, this is their Six Nations, they're going to win. And I wonder whether they are as feeling as disappointed as everyone is externally. You know, when you get interviewed by the media and they go, so you're on for a Grand Slam game, or you're, you know, X and Y is going to happen. And we turn around and say, actually, no, we haven't talked about that once. We've talked about doing our job properly. I would have thought with Gregor Townsend and Scotland, they would have beaten England, celebrated that moment, come in and go, look, we had a good week. We've got to make sure we back it up against Wales. Then they lose. And then everyone talks about, you know, the kind of failure. And then there was an opportunity for them to potentially beat France or become France's banana skin, and they didn't do it. Are they feeling as equally disappointed, or are they being much more realistic, do you think, in camp, going, look, do you know what? We've got some good players now. We can actually play well. We've beaten an England side, but we need to be more grounded. Or do you think, I'm all just more hypotheticals, do you think they're like, everyone else is going, oh, fucked it again?
Eddie Jones said it when we spoke to him, Tins, at Penny Hill. And he just said, you know, these games are such fine margins now. England beat South Africa by 3 in November and everyone goes bananas. England lose by 3 in Murrayfield and everyone's like, oh my God, England are falling apart at the seams. Suddenly Scotland are the great team, and yet they lose by 3 in Cardiff the week later. So the top 8 in the world now, anybody can take a chunk out of anybody on any day. I think it's harder to find a run of form unless you are playing as well as the France team is in this moment. I mean, the rest, I think, will all knock each other over. So,
I was just looking. I wanted to put some context on it. If you look at it, meters made, Scotland made 600, France made 450. There is bits around there, but you'd say, look, kicks from hand. Scotland only did 11, France did 26. So are you saying they didn't manage their end well enough?
Well, Eddie Jones says that the side that kicks the most will win the game. He's, you know, he's said it twice now. They've got this algorithm or whatever that they can predict to a 96% margin, who's going to win? And he said that when he was coaching Japan, they kicked more than anybody else, but because they played in the right areas and played with attacking flair, everyone thought they were brilliant. Obviously, England get labelled as kicking too much, but actually the side, more often than not, that kicks the most at this level at the moment will win. Bizarrely, I mean, I don't know, there's probably exceptions to the rule, but I think it is interesting that the fact that Scotland are, as we said at the very first show, got talent across the board. They're not far off.
Yeah.
The question was, are they the team that can then go on and win a title? They're always going to be that team who can ruin someone else's title. And they are so close now, and they're competing on every chat. They're scoring the tries that we need. I think they're not having their usual back three. There were a few changes up front as well. So I think in the pack, they had, what, six changes in their pack? That's a huge change to go through your line-out detail, your mauling, your scrummaging throughout the week, and then be singing on the weekend. And if your nuts and bolts aren't right against a team that has everything, you know, we should send, not to make it political, we should be sending them to the Ukraine. They've got the full toolkit. They can get a job done. That is not an easy thing to do. And yes, they, you know, 6-2, but
if Hoggy takes the one that, suddenly it's a very different game.
I actually didn't, you know, normally I get onto him when he makes a mistake. Yeah, I've done that. No. I'll leave it with him.
Yeah, I just
but let's say,
leave it.
Just do it on the pod instead.
Yeah, you know, he walks that in. I don't think they still win, but it's a different game. And
I think it'll be an interesting taste for some of those players to play against a side as quality as France. Like, I know when you've gone onto the field and you think you've got stuff sorted and then you go against an opposition, you're like, wow.
This is where we get to.
This is what we get to. What is it? And what is it when we do the analysis this week? What is it they did so well? Physicality over the game line, speed of ball, attacking options, kicking out of hand, you know, looking after the ball, whatever it is that France do so well, is to see if we can mirror it. I remember we were getting pumped all the time and then we looked at breakdown speed. You know, we were playing, say, the All Blacks, getting 3 seconds or under for breakdown speed, and we were taking 4 or 5 seconds. It meant that people were able to get back into position. So we spent such a long time with Eddie, A, or the way we ball carried, B, how quickly we were to clear up, how close the men was to our body height. And it changed to the point where we started to play a much more attacking game, a much more speedy game. And actually, I think it is quite a good leveller to get a little taste of that and to see where the benchmark is.
Yeah. Don't fret, Scotland. We're coming to cheer you up. I'm not sure this is the news you need necessarily, but you've got it regardless, because the Good, the Bad and the Rugby have teamed up with Vodafone. I'm sure you know this by now, in partnership with the British and Irish Lions to support grassroots clubs' return to rugby. So this Saturday, the 5th of March, we are off up north to Bannockburn RFC.
I just like saying that.
Bannockburn. The Battle of Bannockburn.
It makes you sound Scottish, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't not say it.
We're going to be celebrating Bannockburn's veterans. Are you going to take your boots?
They're always in the bag.
Who are going to be playing? Hask, the Lord, and myself are on call to put them through their paces. or pacemakers, who knows. It's going to be a full day of rugby. We're going to be doing a big old live show in the evening, which I understand has been sold out. And to top it off, your old mate from 2017, Tommy Seymour, is coming along as well. I'm sure we'll have one or two other special guests on the day. We do want to say a big thank you to Canterbury, who are going to be providing the kit on the day, and Vodafone, who are driving this initiative to further the support of grassroots rugby. And as I'm sure you know, Vodafone are also developing a resource on their V-Hub for all community clubs across the UK and Ireland, which will help small businesses develop their digital capabilities following the pandemic, which, as we all know, is much needed right now. Keep your eyes peeled in spring 2022 for a great toolkit if you're looking for one for your club. We're all set for a bumper day and cannot wait to get stuck in. And if you're in the area, we would love to see you at Bannockburn Rugby Football Club this Saturday. Come and get involved. Time for an orange card in the game off the back of events in Dublin? Question mark.
Something needs to be done around the substitutions. It's a ridiculous ruling. I get why it's there, because even though we're a game of gentlemen, somehow we seem to, when it comes around to substitutions.
Special delivery.
That is a lovely Domino's jacket.
Ding dong. Josh, our head of sales, has come in wearing a Domino's jacket, and I have to say, I think it suits you better than the head of sales role.
Really like yeah.
You're looking very smart.
You've actually been better.
Air vented. Air vented.
Christ alive. I mean, talk about Domino. How many pizzas have you bought this week?
We've got three.
Someone's put mushrooms on mine. I don't want it. Please.
Right. Okay. Maybe it's not for you, James.
By the way, Josh is still single. Ladies, listen to the podcast.
But he does do a mean pizza delivery.
And he will deliver. Okay. Turn around and smile at the camera, please.
You've got to smile at the camera.
Give him a wave.
Have to kneel down a bit.
Well, actually,
drop down.
Crouch down. See, there we are. There we are, ladies.
There's Josh.
Slide into his DMs.
Single, ready to mingle.
Gorgeous Josh.
Happy to bring dough balls wherever he
He's got some hot dough that he'll come delivering to your door, girls, whatever you need.
Well done.
See you later, Domino's.
It's like Captain Flashheart.
Woof. Delicious.
There goes our head of sales, who doubles up as a pizza delivery boy. Multi-talented, and that's what we demand of our team. We'll come on to our dough baller of the week, but let's clear up. I mean, just
General Melcher's driver should do. She's used to hanging around with the big knobs. Woof.
I was going to say earlier, rugby at the moment as a test team is incredibly quick to bite you on the arse. You think you got it nailed, Scotland, and it comes and it nibbles.
Yes.
Rugby as a game at the moment, you're thinking, you know, Scotland-France, great game. England-Wales, absolute thriller. Ireland against Italy, well, you know, we know what's going to... Oh, my God, what is happening here? What?
Turn off the TV.
20 minutes, I've gone to do the ironing, which is not unusual, but it's like, you know, it's a big Six Nations game.
Yeah.
And it's taken a gun to its foot.
It's a tough one because you know they're in for a tough day anyway with an on-form Ireland, and then to handicap them by a law that was made up because of things that people have done in the past. I would have focused more on the other side and making sure people can't do what they've done. So if you go off, why have they gone off? Are they actually injured? You've got an individual or medical guy to HIA. If someone goes off with an injury, why can't he also check that it's a genuine injury?
The starting hooker had quite clearly gone off just like his
shoulder. It's not that they've done it on purpose. Yeah. But also then, I don't know, this is a question that I don't know because I've never been in the pack. Before the game, when you declare your team, you should declare who is available to play in the front row and keep things contested if you have them. So it's already put out there, you know that.
The problem is there's a load of legal requirements you've got to have gone in the front row to be able to know what you're doing.
But then you would know that of your players that are on the bench.
I don't think anyone... Because they say to me once, Haskett goes up, can you go in the front row? I was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Until when I got to about 1:30 and Eddie was like, actually, might be able to bring you back as a prop. I was like, the amount of cash they're on, all you have to do is waddle around the field. You know,
well,
lift.
You'd say that, but our front row had 27 carries on the weekend. And it has to be looked at a way where you do declare who is willing to play in the front row. So if you have another front row on the bench,
I think it comes down to willing. I think putting players willing but not trained. I mean, this is what Kay was saying.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that they are happy because it's been discussed pre-week and they have trained pre-week or they've played in the past. You can easily put that on the sheet that they can play the front row. So that covers the question mark of do you think you can or not. It's already written down and agreed to that if that happens. I've always liked the idea of having more people on the bench with less substitutions that you can adjust things for a tactical thing like that.
Yeah, like bigger match day squads, but you still only have the same amount of subs, but you've got more options.
I still think we should go less subs, but you've got more options that if crazy scenarios happen, you can actually deal with them.
So I did my annual tweet, breaking news, it was a goodie. But the question I was asking, and you're going to get nailed whatever you put out there, was Favia's tackle, which was the straight red card. Is there a difference in this, Dennis? Now, it's unacceptable to put shoulder on head regardless, but is there a difference between a malicious act, which is a straight red card, and a technical foul? Essentially, he set himself too high. Yeah. Is there a difference in your view around the ramifications or the punishment for those incidents?
Yeah.
Because what I want to go on to ask is, if he's got it wrong technically, which is what he has, does that mean that his team should play for 60 minutes with 30, only 14 men? Or should he be sent off and a 20, which is the orange card, 20 minutes down to 14 men, but then you can bring on another player and therefore the game has got a chance to get back to the contest that everybody wants it to be.
I agree there's something to be looked at here, an orange card or whatever. Something like that that's not done with malice. I don't like a red card for something that's not malice. I would say on something like that, you punish the player and don't punish the team. So it's not done on purpose. I don't like games finishing with 14 men because of something like that. So I'm like, you send the player off and you take a punishment like a yellow card or, like you said, 20 minutes, but then you can bring someone on and don't punish the team for something that's so technically, the average Joe who's never played at international rugby doesn't understand the speed of that decision-making process.
Yes.
And sometimes without, you'd be the best player in the world, you still can't get that right. That the team doesn't get punished, just the player. And then he shouldn't get banned for a red card. That's something I think needs to be looked at.
The point you made there, which I thought was really interesting, is if you haven't played international rugby, you've got no understanding of the speed and the size and the decision-making process. I mean, they talk about a batsman having 0.2 seconds to work out what shot to play. I mean, if you've got 30, 15, 16, 17 stone guys running in all different directions, of course you can put out a tweet that says, everyone knows you shouldn't hit the head and therefore it's a red card. But I mean, you've raised your eyebrows at it. Can you just give a sense of actually how difficult it is to make those decisions in real time?
It's very, very hard to do that. And unfortunately, there are so many dynamics in terms of someone dropping their head, your height, you know, even going so low now, you know, often you can get done without using your arms because you can't wrap if you hit you know, you're talking about such nuances at speed and execution that Mike's exactly right. I just think it's something that's ruining the game because we're doing it for the right reasons to make the game more safe. I would say that what irritates me is the things that would actually make a difference to the game we're still not doing, regards to, you know, concussion protocol, lack of contact training and all that kind of changing all that stuff, which is actually what would make a difference. But they 100% need to look into that rule and change it because it's pointless. I think Mike's right. You're not helping the game by making it more complicated to execute things. You should actually go, look, if someone's made a genuine error, have an ability to bring on another player, and then don't punish them if it's a clear mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. It's, you know, I wouldn't know now how to clear out someone because obviously if someone goes over the ball...
I definitely do.
Yeah. Well,
I look forward to anyone at Bannockburn if I'm putting my boots on. Just watch out my clear.
But if someone's going for the ball, you know, you're asked to use force against force.
But it's also force against force, but with a completely unpredictable picture is changing in front of you. I mean, the laws of physics.
And we encourage kids to avoid contact. So you're stepping at the same time. Yeah. You've got all these different sort of things that can affect the execution of what you're doing. But because of that, it's now defining games. I just don't think it's right. And people say everybody knows the rules, but it's not simple.
That is the thing. So with a tackle, just not to go too nauseous, you are always taught you've got to get...
Nauseous?
Nauseous.
The superlative of nauseous.
You've got to get your feet as close to the attacker as possible because you need to be as tight as you can if you're going to make a dominant hit. Now, everyone wants you to tackle lower, but that means you have to drop earlier. That means the people with the athletes that we have in the game now, footwork, they can get an extra yard away from you, which means then you have to lunge, then you can get kneed in the head and you can get knocked out. Not often there is an attacker who gets knocked out by a hit because we've got rid of the clothesline, shoulder charge.
The Trevelio special.
Yeah, we've sort of got rid of those things and people know that they need to try and hit below the ball. You say all those stuff and you make it sound easy, just get lower. It doesn't work like that because you don't want to get stepped. You don't want someone to get an extension that then handoff becomes very easy. There are so many things. I think You are making so multiple decisions. You're wondering, is he going to pass it inside? Is he going to give it outside? There's someone out the back. I've got to stay alert that if he drops it out the back, I'm going to have to shift off. So, and then at the last minute, you've got to drop as low as you can and put force behind it, or you're going to get run over with a big man on a big man. If it's not malicious and if it's not an intent to harm, then fine, the player should get punished, but I don't necessarily believe the team should.
Yeah,
I think you've put that really well, and I think you've explained the nuance of it, which is everybody would agree that head injuries have got to be prevented and you've got to do all you possibly can, but there is a reality to asking 30 guys to go hammer and tong for 80 minutes, factoring in exhaustion, factoring in a completely changing picture in front of defensive lines at all possible moments, that there has to be an understanding that players are going to get it wrong, but that shouldn't influence the outcome of the game. I mean, the game was ruined after 18 minutes, or 19 minutes or whatever it was, as a spectacle, as an event, as an occasion, 50,000 people in the stadium just waiting for the full-time whistle.
I don't think Robbie can afford to have moments ruined. I don't think the plethora of kind of of riches and finances to have games like that ruined at the international level and to make up some spurious rules that are so complicated. When we got interviewed before the Globe thing and they was talking about, do you feel like you left rugby at the right time? You're one of your last games for WASS or whatever. When I left, I said, rugby's gone soft, because I went to hit someone, and as I hit him, my arm rode off his shoulder, got him, didn't hit him in the face, but just got him above shoulder height, pulled him down, the ball popped out, and we scored, and they brought it all the way back to that moment, saying it was like a high tackle or dangerous, and it started
like,
low.
It's like the seatbelt tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seatbelt tackle, it was called a seatbelt tackle because it can't get much safer than that.
Yeah.
And now it's allowed because one arm's over the neck. It's complete nonsense of what it is. Because when you're on an outside break, if I'm at 13 and I'm defending, when people are running out, they lean and put their feet away from you. Oh, sorry, I leaned away from the microphone. I'm doing it as well. They lean their upper body into you and move their legs away. So you can't really side them down. So it's the only way you can tackle is just put one over there and they fall over and you fall on top of them. And it was a tackle of my choice a lot of the time, because you can use them to bounce off the floor back to your feet and then you're on the ball.
Yeah.
And now they've got rid of that. It makes it really hard for a 13. So then he has to lunge underneath the shoulder and the handoff probably. And it's so hard to do, because as I said, you need to get close. You've got his shoulder in there. Where are you supposed to tackle?
Yeah.
It's interesting around the breakdown when they took away, the croc roll or being able to roll someone. That was the easiest way to get someone out of the breakdown. Now I have to hit the guy at such a hard speed. And I have to pick a window between his head, his neck, under his arm.
All of which is bent over. And all of which is bent over.
Yeah. And people go, every now and then you'd get someone to do a knee, unfortunately, with a croc. But actually,
Jack Willis.
But that's only because you could do the splits.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was because you got in such a low position and didn't move. Most people, especially when you teach you jiu-jitsu or anything else, where your neck goes, your body follows. You can't resist it. So you just come in low, roll someone straight off like a McCall, roll him off. The ball will be exposed. You get there. Now you've literally made the game more aggressive, because I have to shift you using
the pilot, and because everyone gets so long, I'll pile into the back of your neck.
Yeah, and so it's. I just think
they're just I have a fix for that too.
Do you?
Yeah, everyone's got to step over if they want to steer the ball.
That's what we used to do when we were eight.
Yeah, yeah. But then you create three sort of zones where you can actually clear underneath people's shoulders, because no one holds their feet now, right? No. Anyone who says they're holding their weight, it's a complete lie. Unless they're at the circus most of their life, or they were a circus boat growing up, they can't balance when their hips are in front of their toes. And so many people are still doing it.
I would generally be terrified to play now. Because I would imagine you get into a Grand Slam decider game and you're like fired up, you're physical, that's part of your game. And one miscalculation, and that's you over ruin the whole game.
Yeah.
They have to change it. And again, I always wonder about who makes these rules, because they're never discussed with any player group I've ever heard of. They sort of just appear.
They do have old players on almost.
Great. Right. Excellent.
Well, I don't know.
We are a sport of old committees. Yeah. So
old committees and chaps
we'll be
played when defence was optional.
We are available.
My favourite thing is the ones that used to be the most violent are all in charge of the sighting commissions
Wade
now.
Dooley. Yeah. Wade Dooley.
That is archetypal poacher turned gamekeeper.
Yeah. It was not Probin.
Paul Rendell.
I gave Probin a hug the other day at an event, and I gave him a little wrestle, and I think he thought I was going to fight, tried to throw me down the stairs. And I was honestly like, wow, still got that aggressive streak.
There isn't a lot to talk about after Dublin. But I just quick a nod to Michele Lamaro, the Italian captain, young guy.
Very difficult situation.
But they've got a proper leader.
Do you know what I liked about it? And you talk about leadership is where there was a prop sort of got really angry about it in the background.
Yes, and he
sort of paused the referee. And he turned around and he went, "Hey, back off!" And literally the guy was wandered off. And you know, he was there and he was very calm and he accepted it. I mean, he could have really let that get to his head a little bit. And he was getting good advice by the looks of things from the sideline as well, because he was in like a three-way with obviously someone on the management team who's saying, we have to go down to 13. But yeah, I mean, to finish the game with only 12, I mean, Andy Farrell's like, I thought I was playing league. Did you not say in that interview with Andy Farrell, there was a bit of Irish coming into him?
Was there?
It was like Northern crossed with a sort of Dublin massive. It was interesting.
He's got Irish family, I think. He's got family connections.
You're paying your
Dublin
mega cash. It's funny how you pick up the local dialect.
It's the old Harry Enfield sketch. Giordio, the Spanish manager.
Back of the game, like.
There isn't a huge amount to talk about, as you said, from Dublin, but we are going to do our dough ball of the week, who is going to go to
Matt Lowry.
I love it when cult figures come in. There'll be so many people who don't understand Matt Lowry.
Really?
Bad boys.
I know, yeah.
Well, we're not going to send him a dough ball. You're welcome to have a dough ball, but we're going to give Matt Lowry our dough ball of the week, which is our prize for sort of stand-up. Why are we giving it to Mike?
Well, obviously two tries on his debut, and then he could have scored a hat-trick. And he just unselfishly gave it to his winger to score easy, and I like that. And I did put a picture of Mike Lowry from Bad Boys putting on his suit ready to go out, and I was like, this is Mike Lowry when he walks into Christelle's in Dublin tonight. And then he actually liked it and he messaged me going, this is class.
Good. Because of Mike Lowry's generosity in not accepting that.
I don't think you could ever do that.
I'm just quoting film scripts. We're going to say Mike Lowry.
Oh, God.
Our Domino's Dough Baller of the Week prize, which is a 50 quid voucher. So tuck into that, Mike. And well played to you, sir, on your Six Nations debut. Thank you to Domino's as well, who've pulled out all the stops and made the dough balls that we have in front of us, especially for the good, the bad, and the rugby. They're not widely available, apparently. Only the very best.
There's some great content coming from them as well soon.
And a reminder as well that Domino's are offering 50% off pizza when you spend £30 or more online. Thank you to the team at Domino's. Well done for holding off on the pizza. You may now eat for 2 minutes and we'll put elevator music over the top. Or fast forward this section. God, I'm hungry. Oh, you've got the pepperoni.
All right.
Lowry.
We are.
I am.
You can't invite us to eat and then stop.
Al, do you want some pepperoni? I've got off some here for you.
Pepperoni. Well done. Finished chewing. I hope, viewers and listeners, that we've done that more acceptably than we have in the last few weeks, but sometimes needs must. Are you all right? What are you doing?
I'm still chewing.
Well, hurry up.
Your chewing's better than your heavy breathing, actually. I'd rather tune into that.
But if you combine them both.
I know, that's, yeah.
But don't open my mouth.
Pass out. It's an assault on the senses. Right, Tins is finishing off his dough balls. Inga Tuigamala. And actually, very sadly, Joely Vendiri, who Super Rugby fans will remember as a great of the Auckland Blues when they were in their heyday. And we often talk about how good Super Rugby was back in 96, 97. He very sadly passed away on the same day. So very sad times in New Zealand. But Inga the winger, I mean, it's an unbelievably glowing tributes, not just about the player, but about the man as well. Did you play against? Are you free to talk or not?
I am. I'm back.
Back in the game. Did you play against Inga in your early years?
I think I did, yeah. In the Newcastle days. I mean, he was just an unbelievable bloke. And not just the player, obviously a man mountain, literally like a prop on the wing, but just as a human being. You know, I was reading Harvey Thornycroft's, wrote a little thing to him on LinkedIn and about his first time he played it, and he was playing the game of his life against Epi.
Tione.
Yeah, and they moved Epi to the other wing, and he was like, well, whoever they bring on, I've seen
I've dealt
Epi
with
yeah,
a Tongan Lord, yeah.
I can take it on. And then Inga came on, who tried to run and drop the shoulder on him, and he absolutely buried him. And he picked him up, but first person to pick him up went, mate, don't try and do that again.
Yeah. with a smile.
I think he said, "Don't try to do that again, old man." And then was the first person to shake his hand after. And that was, you know, you just only have to talk to Jason Robinson about Inge, and he puts, you know, his whole change in his life down to Inge the winger. And yeah, he was just a great human being, and it's a sad, very, very sad to see him die so young.
He would have been in Wasps when you were fanboying.
Yes.
Do you remember watching him play and just?
Yeah, I do. And then obviously
one of the original box office superstars. He was
the original Jonah before Jonah was the man. Do you know what I mean? He was the guy that like straight trucked it, footwork, had that power. You know, kind of everything that you now feel is synonymous with big wingers. He was the original G to ever do that. And as I said, you know, earlier in the show, you watch the highlights of just the intensity and passion he ran at. A lot of all the videos I saw, little white boys running around, and you just got him as an iron just smoking over the top of people.
Running aggressively, I think is how you best describe it.
Just with that absolute pure passion and hatred, but also what a real gentleman. I think it's very sad as well to die so young, but to leave an incredible mark. You know, not many people will leave the legacy that he has left. And as I said, he was the original guy and won a hero all round.
Inge the winger, gone but certainly never forgotten. And Joe Elie Vendiri as well, two superstars of years gone by. I suppose onto happy things. I quickly wanted to mention Richmond Minis, and I know you want to talk about Minch Minis. Can you give us a little brief? Because you had two unbelievably exciting games in the sunshine.
Yeah, it was Jouet on the down Minch on Sunday morning.
Right.
It's always hard to get Mia to go, but then she's like, I don't like it.
Exactly the same with Harry.
I don't like it. And then she get there and she's off. Mia scored a couple, but we had first game. We were playing against Painswick. Coach George was there, Skivington, with his boys.
Gorgeous George was there.
He was there with his lad was playing for Painswick against Mia. So it was an 8-all thriller in the first game and then a 9-all thriller in the second. Oh, I could say 40-40 if you want to put five points on each try, but
that is box office.
It was
and
box office.
And by the end,
I tell you, tag rugby is impossible. If you've got slinky hips, you talked about, I left an arm out there. There's kids go, how have you not managed to grab these flags? And then you sort of have a bit where Mia's on the bench and you say, right, I'll catch you. And she just moves. You can't get these flags. Really? It's impossible.
Is Mia slinky hips and speedy?
She's obviously got them from her mother. Saturday Night Zara.
It's funny how much she's changed over the last sort of this year since they've been back, figuring out how to avoid people. Because before, they'd just all be really bunched. Now they're getting more where they run across, but then they're all stepping back and people are just falling around.
But Mia's also pretty much a bit of a badass. She's kind of my, like, I kind of want, if, you know, baby potato when she arrives, I kind of wanted to end up like Mia because she's proper badass. When we went on a shooting date up there, one of her cousins pushed her over, one of her girl cousins, and she was on the floor like mithering, and Tins and I were talking. And she was like, Dad, I was like, Mia, just get up and get her. Go and get her. And she was like, Mia, you went, Mia, just get up. And she ran over, tackled her. They're having a full-on scrap, like, you know, not punch, but a full-on scrap. I was like, choke her out. It was amazing. And they were like, she was proper into it, not like, she's a bit of a girly girl.
Asker just taught her how to do an arm bar. So unfortunately, Isla's recovered. She's in hospital, but...
Right. No, she's a proper... I'm so worried for the baby onion at this point. It's going to be off the top rope in no time
at
all.
But I kind of like that because the balance of, like, she'll play quite quietly and be quite girly when wants to be, but we'll give it out when required. I think that's kind of the modern day woman, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Welcome to 2022.
So talk to us about Richmond. Well, are we in contact? Full contact?
Yeah, so Harry's under 10s and it's absolutely full contact. And I wanted to just say mainly a massive thanks to Neil and Michelle and Andy and all the coaches at Richmond. They do a fantastic job. We had a day at Rosslyn Park in the sunshine. God, it makes a difference when the sun shines. 100 kids running around Rosslyn Park, proper outfit, proper club. And what was really interesting, and the bit I was going to mention is that, I mean, Harry is nearly 10 and sort of watches a bit of the international stuff, but they've got a 4G pitch at Rosslyn Park. And so they had 100 kids running around going bananas, lots of tackling, everyone having a good time. And then all the minis went off and had hot dogs. And 5 minutes later, the under-16s game started. And the impact of watching the under-16s for the under-9s and under-10s was enormous. So normally we're straight in the car and home. And we spent we watched the whole game. And
that was more for you, though.
That was more for me.
Yeah.
Well, and I say that because it was a proper game. So Rosslyn Park took on Dorking, and I just wanted to give a shout out because Dorking, proper side, they were victorious. Congratulations to them. But Rosslyn Park played really well, and they scored in the corner. I was sitting in the sunshine with a mate, just sort of waiting for the kids to stop mucking around. And they scored right in the corner. And as the kid walked back to kick the conversion, he was getting his kicking tee, and he said, my God, are you Alex Payne? And I said, yes, I am. And he goes, I love the pod. I've listened to all. I listened to the Dan Carter one just the other day. And I said, good on you. I said, if you get this, I'll mention you on the pod. So he put his tee down and I was standing right behind him. So I was kind of putting the pressure on and he missed. So I can't mention him. But then they scored again in exactly the same corner. As he walked back, I sort of saw his eyes flicker and he looked and I said, double or quits. You get it and I'll mention it. And he missed it again. So I'm really sorry, kiddo. You don't get the mention.
You're in the
but
ether.
The story goes in. You're and in it was just really good to see. I mean, proper athletes at under 16 level.
He needs to send that video in when he doesn't get one from the touchline. Yeah. And then it'll
send us in a worldie and we'll give you a shout out. To both those two teams.
How much better, though, would kids rugby be if it was a summer sport?
Well, this is it. This is exactly what we were talking about.
And how many of them would stick at it? Because there's nothing worse when you start learning contact, a local grassroots field, which could be on a slight incline or a massive incline.
Yeah.
You go to tackle someone, you get a cold boot in the face, on a cold face,
sliding
in tears,
deer shit.
Fox shit, your knees are cut up, and you just go, this is awful, I don't want to go. Yeah. It almost put me off for life. I was just like that as a kid. I just didn't want to go down for years. Summer, absolutely key.
I could not reemphasize that more because in December, January, all at the end of the training session, we're running for the car because Harry's freezing. And yesterday in the sunshine in Roslyn Park, he was there for an hour and a half.
The argumentative,
hot dogs, drinks.
The argumentative fans say, well, you know, what about, you know, grassroots fields and the quality of grounds maintenance and being hard? Well, the kids in South Africa get on with it and they're all the toughest people I've ever met. So if little Bertie falls over and grazes his knee, it's better than falling in a pile of mud. And do you know what might toughen him up a bit? Or little Sarah falls over. These are non-existent kids, but you know what I'm saying? I don't see that as a problem. Yeah, I know they talk about concussion, but it's like, you know, you get knocked out hitting a field, hitting a muddy field. I think it would be much better. And I think it would change the attendance. It would change the excitement, you know, and also lots more grassroots clubs would make way more money because people would be hanging around for barbecues, for food, community spirit. People would come down. Now, it's awful. I see little kids with their little shorts on, tiny shorts, little leggings, gloves, baggy tops. And you're like, oh, I feel so. I don't want to get out of the car, and I'm a full-grown adult, let alone being forced down to my local rugby club.
Yeah, it's great fun. It's been a really good weekend.
It has.
I feel very good about the sport at the moment. We occasionally, you know, get a bit down, and it's a bit like a mechanic. You fix cars all day. You don't necessarily want to go home and talk about cars. But I think at the moment, rugby's in a. It's nice to have a heartwarming weekend.
Do you want to talk about Spain beating Romania?
Well, give us an update.
Well, so Spain beat Romania on the weekend. Obviously, they got the draw against Georgia not so long ago. They could actually, to bring back the debate of what Italy do and do we have a qualification match. So Spain could actually win that group and get the automatic spot in the Rugby World Cup.
Why don't we get rid of Scotland and Wales from the Six Nations? Away trip to Rome, Madrid, Cape Town, London, obviously, Paris,
Milan,
Dublin.
I'm sold.
I mean, I'm pretty certain that they'd be amazing.
At the corporate gigs.
Corporate gigs, the sunshine, and the travel trips.
The Smutbies will look after us in Cape Town. We'd have the time of our lives. I actually think we should do that just for ourselves.
No offence, though.
Let's build our own tournament.
And also, you know, like Cardiff on a night out's great, and the stadium's great. Okay, maybe let's just get rid of Scotland, because I'll be honest with you, it's always raining. The default setting up there is
on Friday.
Okay.
Can we get rid of Scotland after
this weekend?
Back?
Yes, we can. But I'm genuine. What, an away game to Madrid? That'd be next level.
Yes, please.
Yeah. That's rude.
We've done lots of grumbling about rugby's inability to embrace social media. Have you seen the LA Giltinis kit launch just as a finale?
I did see, and it was fantastic. Celine Dion.
Tom Bobby Mitchell. I mean, we talk about Roman Untermak having the greatest hair in the game, I think, at the moment.
Yeah. He's got that sort of
it's like a mane.
Caveman maney macho.
What were the people who had the tigers, you know, in Vegas, who had always had
Siegfried and Roy.
Siegfried and Roy. He's got, he's Siegfried plus and Roy at the moment. If you haven't seen it, it's well worth having a look. LA Giltinis kit.
But there is some great
Celine Dion on TikTok.
There is some great social media. Like, I think Bristol do very good social media, but I think
Barbers do very good.
The reason they like it is because it's so out the ordinary in comparison to all the other vanilla stuff. And actually, some of the other social media companies, because I've seen the videos or clubs, we're going to do some really creative videos. And when it comes to posting, they all shit themselves and then don't do it. It's weird. There was an amazing one between, I think, Tigers and Bristol a couple of years ago where they did a full skit of the Anchorman car park fight. you know, got in and like when Brick kills a man with a trident. Like,
yeah.
And they go through the whole routine. They were going to put it out there. And one, I think it was the Tiger guys, whatever, just bottled it and just wouldn't let them post it. And the video content was amazing. It had guys lip syncing to the full words, all dressed up in costumes, false moustaches, you know, don't touch the hair or face. And they bought, so there is the ability to do it, but we're still just governed because what happens if we put a funny social video out and we lose? Everyone's going to get upset, or we'll just get on with life and at least we've got a funny video to watch when we're depressed at home.
Love it. Any more before we wrap up? Any final thoughts?
No, I thought the players' lounge was great. I thought it was a bit dry to start with. That bloke with the custard cords, he really kicked things on. I thought discovering that Pat Sanderson had mowed his foot off with a fly mow.
Yeah, that was extraordinary.
I let him tell the full story of that. And it's great to see Shane Williams.
Yeah.
Got to say again, he was very much out the mould of Ryan Jones' club. I saw him and I was like, oh God, I'm so sorry. How long have you got? And he went, no, I've just taken up Iron Man. I was like, oh, because you know, they've got that real glassy, super lean look.
Hollow eyes.
Yeah. And he said, even he admitted it, he went, it's awful. He goes, I wanted to run a marathon. I thought it was quite good with the adulation, but actually these Ironmen, they're not fun. You're on your own. It's terrible, but the sportsman mentality, they're all addicted to doing it.
Yeah. A good weekend. A couple of bits before we finish, and we try and be a broad church and we try and help good causes wherever we can. So I just want to give two quick shout outs. First of all, to Andy Vaughton, who is a dad of three and has recently been diagnosed with motor neuron disease. And I hope you're hanging in there, Andy. It's a tough old battle to fight. But it is great to hear that you're going full bore at the fundraising for MND Association and the My Name's Doddy Foundation. Andy and his team, the Sandbaggers, are looking to set the record for the longest game of beach touch rugby. They've got to go for 33 hours and 33 minutes. Guinness Book of Records are going to be there over the course of the event. It's taking place on the 20th and 21st of May on Branscombe Dean Beach in Poole in Dorset. And they are looking for supporters for the event itself. Get down there if you're in the area. And sponsors as well. So if Motor Neuron Disease Association or the My Name's Doddy Foundation are two causes that touch your heart and you'd like to get involved, please do so. They are good people to support and you can find out more details by Googling the Sandbaggers. So good luck to Andy. And we did also just want to take a note and a moment to talk about a 17-year-old rugby player called Niall Stringer, who has very sadly taken his own life recently. It goes without saying that our thoughts are with his family, friends and teammates at Rochford 100 and Old Brentwoods in Essex, and they have set up a fundraising page as well. So you can donate if you'd like to help with covering funeral costs to the family's Just Giving page, which is well up to over 13 grand. So thank you to everyone that's been involved with that already. If you're local to the area, Old Brentwoods RFC are also putting on a memorial game on the 1st of May. The rugby community, when it does come together, is a wonderful thing. And I hope that, Niall, you are fondly remembered and there is a toast to you on the 1st of May.
Can I just add one thing to that? For those of you who listened to our podcast, who are predominantly men, if you're having issues, you're feeling down, you're having bad days, which we all have, you've got problems going on, please speak up about it. Please reach out to someone, friends, family, a therapist. There are so many facilities out there. You know, taking your own life should never be an option. And we're always very vocal on this podcast about that. And a lot of the people from Niall's club contacted me, wanted me to repost stuff. And do you know what? The most important thing we can do instead of reposting stuff is it doesn't have the effect, is to talk about it on here and actually make a massive difference. And you know, as I said, everybody has bad days. Everybody's got something going on, even if they look like the most happy person in the world. Call your mates up, check in. If you don't hear from them, don't take no for an answer. Don't take fine for an answer. Find out what's going on. But also, you have to match talk with action. You can't just sit there and go and speak to someone. You need to make sure you change things and help people, because we can't have that happen. And if we can save one life on this show and someone reaching out, that's the most important thing.
Yeah. And there are charities out there. There's Loose Heads and Brave Minds. So yeah, just to echo Hask's words, don't sit there in silence. You could go out, share a beer with your mate. He'd want to be part of it. So just let him in.
100%. I'll throw it out there as well. I talk to someone every week. It's the best hour of the week.
You're welcome.
You've got us too. I
speak to you every day.
It's working with you too. It means I have to go talk to someone else every week. It is worth doing. Please look after each other and please don't suffer in silence. So we'll leave that as a thought. A couple of other just quick bits before we go. Predictabet, we've mentioned already. 2 out of 3 this week. Do have a look at how he's faring on our socials. And thank you to City Index for making Bert the Predictor a thing. City Index, of course, are partners here at The Good, The Bad and The Rugby and the leading provider of spread betting, CFD and FX trading. We do need a 3 out of 3. I hope that'll come in round 4. But good luck with that. And there is a new episode of The Good Scaz and the Rugby out as well. Came out last week. Scaz and Elmer had Rachel Taylor on. Don't miss it. A really interesting chat with the ex-Wales coach and international. It's been really nice having a positivity session.
It has. Just two little bits. I thought Elmer was brilliant. She actually spoke sense, and when she came into the live show last week,
she took everything that you said and articulated it in a really sort of concise way.
Really professional. Chloe was like, she's brilliant. She should be on the show more regularly.
It was quite funny on the back of that. Obviously, she was about what South Africa want to do coming into the Six Nations and everything else. And someone then had a go at Emily Scarrett because she was like, Emily shouldn't be saying, you know, that stuff. She needs to look more into it. Poor Emily. It's about time Emily had some game against her.
Who's currently got a statue in central London.
That was my second point, yes. Well, for a woman who's had an amazing career but absolutely hates the fact she has a podcast named after her, The Good, The Scaz and The Rugby, I obviously want this to be the James Haskell Show with friends, but that was vetoed. She's now got a statue of herself in, I think, a display somewhere in London, I think near London Bridge or one of the bridges, in pink. She looks fantastic. So for someone who shuns the spotlight, she's got a show and a statue. What's next?
I think she's like you, though. She just shuns it until cash is thrown in front of her or accolades, and then she, oh yeah, no, I can do that.
Yeah, if you could just fire up. Yeah, I have three statues.
Scaz back in action on the bench for Loughborough as well. So very nice to see her back, and very nice to have producer Shira back this week as well, who's off the bench and back into production action. We have been The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. We will see you next week. As we said, the show is pulled together by Shira. Lovely to have you back. And the world-class fixer, there's Matt Chuck Norris. The Good, The Bad and The Rugby is a Folding Pocket production. Look after each other. Have a very good week.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.